just a moment this evening, I should like to take a look first at two passages, both from the Old Testament. We'll read together. The first from 2 Chronicles chapter 9, 2 Chronicles chapter 9, and the other from Ecclesiastes chapter 5. The first is written about Solomon, and the other comes from the inspired works of Solomon, and they're both, oddly enough, on the same subject. 2 Chronicles chapter 9, we begin reading with the 13th verse. 2 Chronicles chapter 9, beginning at verse number 13. The weight of gold that came to Solomon yearly was 666 talents of gold, besides what the traveling merchants and traders brought. And all the kings of Arabia and governors of the country brought gold and silver to Solomon. And King Solomon made 200 large shields of hammered gold. 600 shekels of hammered gold went into each shield. He also made 300 shields of hammered gold. 300 shekels of gold went into each shield. The king put them in the house of the forest of Lebanon. Moreover, the king made a great throne of ivory and overlaid it with pure gold. The throne had 6 steps with a footstool of gold, which were fastened to the throne. There were armrests on either side of the place of the seat, and 2 lions stood beside the armrest. 12 lions stood there, one on each side of the 6 steps. Nothing like this had been made for any other kingdom. All King Solomon's drinking vessels were gold, and all the vessels of the house of the forest of Lebanon were pure gold. Not one was silver, for this was accounted as nothing in the days of Solomon. For the king's ships went to Tarshish with the servants of Hiram. Once every 3 years the merchant ships came, bringing gold, silver, ivory, apes, and monkeys. So King Solomon surpassed all the kings of the earth in riches and wisdom. And all the kings of the earth sought the presence of Solomon to hear his wisdom, which God had put in his heart. Each man brought his present, articles of silver and gold, garments, armor, spices, horses, and mules at a set rate year by year. Solomon had 4,000 stalls for horses and chariots and 12,000 horsemen, whom he stationed in the chariot cities and with the king at Jerusalem. So he reigned over all the kings from the river to the land of the Philistines, as far as the border of Egypt. The king made silver as common in Jerusalem as stones. And he made cedar trees as abundant as the sycamores which are in the lowland. And they brought horses to Solomon from Egypt and from all lands. Now, if you'll turn to Ecclesiastes chapter 5 at verse 10 and the verses following this one, you notice that the man who writes these words knows something of which he speaks. Solomon writes in Ecclesiastes 5 beginning at 10, "He who loves silver will not be satisfied with silver, nor he who loves abundance with increase. This also is vanity. When goods increase, they increase who eat them. So what profit have the owners except to see them with their eyes? The sleep of a laboring man is sweet, whether he eats little or much, but the abundance of the rich will not permit him to sleep. There is a severe evil which I have seen under the sun, riches kept for their owner, to his hurt. But those riches perish through misfortune. When he begets a son, there is nothing in his hand. And as he came from his mother's womb, naked shall he return to go as he came. And so he shall take nothing from his labor which he may carry away in his hand. And this also is a severe evil. Just exactly as he came, so shall he go. And what profit has he who has labored for the wind? all his days. He also eats in darkness, and he has as much sorrow and sickness and anger. Now, the first part of our readings concern that from 2 Chronicles, a passage we don't find ourselves at very often. Maybe an obscure Bible class reference or a reference in a sermon, or as we're reading through the Bible, perhaps we find ourselves along that area of the Scriptures. But it speaks of the tremendous wealth of Solomon, the king that replaced his father David, of course. In our estimation today, these amounts of gold he received every year of his 39 years as king was in the neighborhood of 23 to 25 tons of gold, around 50,000 pounds of gold. And that's where the section of his wealth begins. It's not the end. That's the beginning place. That's the starting place. You know, now we weigh gold in troy ounces, and how much is just a bit, an ounce of gold worth? Well, I remember when it hit 1,000, and now it's much over 1,000 just for the ounce. Well, here every year, Solomon has 50,000 pounds of gold coming in. It has been estimated that at one point Solomon may have been worth somewhere in the neighborhood of $1.2 trillion. Today we talk about millionaires and billionaires and how many billionaires now have hundreds of billions of dollars, but we have yet to see a trillionaire in our time. But we act as if our time is all the times that have ever been. Solomon most probably was actually a trillionaire. And so when he speaks about the folly of making money your priority or having a love for money, no one would know more about this than the man that had more of it than anybody else, perhaps then or ever since. It is true that when the Bible says that we need to be careful about the evil connected with money, it does not say that money is the root of all evil. That's a common caricature of the Scriptures. The Bible says the love of money is the root of all evil in 1 Timothy chapter 6. And there is a distinction to be made there, but so often in the way we look at things, the distinction is minor. Because it's hard not to have it without falling in love with it. And you don't even have to have it to have fallen in love with it. Jesus talks about the problem of laying up treasures on earth rather than laying up treasures in heaven in Matthew chapter 6. And in that same context, he goes on to talk about the danger of trying to serve two masters at once and how that's impossible. And the two masters he's talking about, God and Mammon, the god of material things, the god of this world. We might even say the god of money. And so it's understandable when a man comes to Jesus interrupting his sermon in Luke chapter 12. With a personal matter that he wants Christ to settle right there on the spot. And says to Jesus, speak to my brother that he divide the inheritance with me. Based upon what the Bible says otherwise, we are not surprised to have Jesus responding by saying, in part, take heed and beware of covetousness. For a man's life does not consist in the abundance of the things which he possesses. And then Jesus tells the parable of the rich farmer that had such a bounteous crop one year that he thought within himself, I'll build bigger barns, and there I'll bestow all my goods and all my fruits. And I'll say to myself, you have much goods, let it for many years eat, drink, and be merry. And of course, Jesus, as this parable comes to a startling and striking close, makes the point that that night that farmer's soul was required of him. And then the question Jesus asked, then whose was all this stuff? To paraphrase somewhat loosely. All this that he had prepared for himself, whose was it? It wasn't his anymore. So is everyone, Jesus says, who's rich to himself and not rich toward God. Well, the reason the New Testament makes these very clear statements about the love of money being the root of all evil in 1 Timothy 6, and saying that we need to beware and take heed that we not be caught in the web of covetousness, that we not lay up our treasures on earth, but instead lay them up in heaven, that we not try to serve both God and the God of money or mammon, is because, practically speaking, we can easily see, if we just have our eyes wide open to the facts, that money so often is not the answer to all of our problems. In many cases, if we got what we thought we wanted and got the result of what we dreamt of and had our love fulfilled toward money, we'd find ourselves in a worse mess than we were before we had what we thought we most wanted. Which brings us back to Solomon. I can't even imagine 60,000 pounds of anything a year, not even gold. That seems like it'd be a lot to move around. It's a lot to deal with. And then the minute that year's up, here comes next year 60,000 pounds of more. Whatever it be, it seems like it'd be too much to deal with. But here it comes year after year, as we just read, every year of his reign. That was basically just his stipend. It comes in, and that, in addition to everything else that comes from all of his bounty coming in on a regular basis. He's got money awash like nobody's ever seen before or perhaps even since. Now, as you read the book of Ecclesiastes and the last of Solomon's life in other books, you realize as his life ebbs and comes to a close, he's far from a happy man. His heart is disquieted. He has a heavy spirit. He's not a happy man. In some cases, that might be because all the wisdom God gave him for understanding some strange and obscure matters left him bereft of any common sense of dealing with his own problems. And in many cases, he dug the holes that he had to live in by way of suffering. But a lot of his difficulty is expressed here in chapter 5 of Ecclesiastes. And it is the great wealth he had that creates in those who have such wealth problems they never saw coming. Now, I have been told that the idea that money doesn't bring happiness statistically and by study has been proven somewhat false, because there is a range of funds that beneath that, when you have it, the means to sustain your life, you've got some real difficulty in mind and in anxiety about what's going to happen next. Christ warns about that worry in chapter 6 of Matthew. But there is a point to be made that if sufficient funds came in to take care of those immediate and necessary things of life, there is a measure of happiness that is not the case beneath that level. And there's a dollar figure they put on it. I won't bother you with that this evening, because once you thought about that dollar figure, you'd be off the reservation in terms of thinking on those things and where you fit in for the rest of this lesson. So I won't tell you what the dollar figure is. Just to say, most of us, we ought to be happy. But then past that point, it's not much past that point that one needs to sustain an orderly life. That the more that comes in, the less happy people tend to become. By their own admission, by the studies had and the polls given, the science proves it out, that past the point of what you need to live, everything you add and top off on top of that leads not to more happiness, not to more contentment, not to more peace of heart, but just the opposite of all of that. And again, the extreme example of that top on top of top is Solomon. And so what does Solomon say in Ecclesiastes 5? And if you're close to a Bible, open up with me, because I'd like to notice some things with you here that make the point as to why. Many of God's commandments are so very practical in the sense we can see how they work. Some are more difficult to accept and see. Some are so very obvious. This is one that is not as obvious as we think, because in the absence of wealth, we tend to think as a world, our problems individually could be solved if we just had the wealth that we think that we are needing, that we're wanting. If I could just win the lottery, if I could just have the Reader's Digest sweepstakes come in for me, if I could just realize I had an uncle that was very wealthy that I didn't know about that left all of his wealth to me, and I woke up and the lawyer called me and said, by the way, and now you've got $1 billion in your bank account because of your dead uncle, or these days perhaps aunt. We think, well, then everything would start going like they always should have gone before now. The things I would do. Well, notice what Solomon says here in Ecclesiastes 5, beginning at 10. He who loves silver, and remember the text we just read, silver was pretty common in the nation, so much so that Solomon wouldn't even deal with that himself. He was a gold man. He wouldn't be bothered by the silver. But this is just a euphemism for money. He who loves money will not be satisfied with it, nor he who loves abundance with increase. Why is that? Because you keep moving the bar whenever you get to where you're going. So you never get to where you're going. Years ago, we had in the congregation there at Liberal, Kansas, we still had two little kids at home, one of our elders was a fairly wealthy man, and he and his wife, good, strong, stalwart members of the church. He was a wonderful elder. But I remember one time that either he or his wife made the point that has stuck with me ever since. They said, now keep in mind, everybody is poor within their own income bracket. And at the time, that didn't mean a lot. The more I lived, the more I realized what truth there was there. You think, oh, if I just had what so-and-so has. You put yourself in their mind, they're in a different category, in a different realm, with different comparisons. And what he's saying by that is that if you're not careful, you're never satisfied wherever you are. Which is exactly what Solomon is saying here. Now, it's not that money's the problem, it's the love of money that's the problem. You notice he says, he who loves silver is not satisfied with it. If that's your priority, if that is what you see as the means of being successful and the sign of being a success, if that's it, then no matter what you have is not quite what you think you could have if you'd done something different, or things worked out just a little differently, or you're always looking for the, like the saying about the farmer that doesn't want all the land, he just wants the piece of ground next to his. And of course, when he gets that piece of ground next to his, all he wants is just that piece of ground that's next to his. You always want just beyond your reach, beyond your grasp. You're never satisfied. And again, the problem is not with the money. It's with the love of money that leads to that kind of thinking, which is never content regardless what one has. It's an addiction that grows. Well, he goes on to say in the next verse, when goods increase, and if you've ever tried to raise a family, you know what this is talking about. When goods increase, they increase who eat them. So what profit hath the owners except to see them with their eyes? Remember back when you got your first money from perhaps babysitting or mowing lawns, or perhaps you worked in a grocery store and you got paid by check. Remember first time you got paid, and then you started having to buy stuff with the money, especially if you had left home and had to have your own place to live and your own car to drive and your own gas to fill the tank and your own insurance to pay for the car. And you realize that what comes in, it's just, well, he says here, what profit is there except just to see it with your eyes? Well, you've got the money coming in, and you can look at it. Well, there it is in the bank account. There it is. And you look back a few days later when you paid your bills, and where to go? Well, it was there. And it seems like whatever comes in, there's always some place for it to go. As you raise a family and the kids come and expenses come in, sometimes alongside the necessities, there are some interesting luxuries you want, and you find a way to use what you have so that you never have quite enough. And you end up saying, well, all I have is just on paper what looks to be some money, some net worth, but no. And again, the problem's not the money. It's the attitude about the money. It's the love of money that leads to this anxiety with never quite having enough. And then in verse 12, he says, the sleep of a laboring man is sweet. A laboring man would be one that under both testaments basically describe what was the norm for so long for so many, and that is one day's wage for one day's work. And you have a good steady job where you can depend on getting through the day to tomorrow. And maybe you can find a way to put a little bit back for today to save for a few tomorrows down the road. But by and large, you're living not just paycheck to paycheck, but day check to day check. And that man, Solomon says, he can sleep at night. Well, how can he? Well, because he knows God gave him the strength to work, and he's got a world that needs work done, and as long as he applies himself, he can get enough to feed himself, feed his family, move forward. He can put his head on his pillow at night and have a good night's sleep. But the rich, with all of his abundance, now, that rich person can't sleep. Why? Well, because what's the stock market doing? How's my 401k going? What's going to happen with interest rates next year? What if somebody comes in and steals my stuff? I need bigger locks for the doors. I've got to have a way to protect my vehicles. What about that second home I've got to take care of and make sure nobody breaks in there? What if somebody breaks in my place when I'm not there and they take over? Because that's what's happening these days, isn't it? You find people that break into homes and aren't theirs, and they squat there, and the law for some time says they've got the rights over the owners. A topsy-turvy, upside-down world, yes. But those are the kinds of worries that people without much money just don't have. And that's Solomon's point. All this money you think would solve your problems, you find you've got some new problems you didn't ever imagine having before you had the income. And so the next verse, there is a severe evil which I've seen under the sun. Riches kept for their owner to his hurt. But those riches perish through misfortune. When he begets a son, there is nothing in his hand. You have it, and it's gone. And you hold on to it to retain it, and there's always some place for it to go, something to spend it on. And as the Bible says in some veiled references otherwise, here you are and say you amass all this wealth and you leave it to fools who waste it. Vanity, uselessness, waste. Because after all, as he says, something that is reiterated numerous times throughout the scriptures. Job, for one, had this idea. As he came from his mother's womb, naked shall he return, to go as he came, and he shall take nothing from his labor, which he may carry away in his hand. And we know that. We know that. You leave this life the same way you came into it, penniless, with just yourself. And it's not that you leave without clothes. You didn't come in with them, but you're not leaving with your body even. Your soul is leaving. And it takes with it things that the soul can take with it, which is not money, which is not houses, not cars, not bank accounts, not even clothes. It takes with it the character it's built, the person it is, the relationship with God it's formed. What matters most, it takes, but what matters least, it leaves. And oddly enough and hard to accept is the fact that all this stuff we have is that which is the least that needs to be left. And so as he says, here you are leaving, having amassed perhaps a few thousand, a few hundred thousand, a few million, a few billion, or in Solomon's case, perhaps over $1 trillion. And the moment comes when you leave this life, how much of that are you going to leave behind you? Well, it doesn't matter if you've got a penny when you die or $1 trillion when you die. Both leave the same percentage, 100%. You can't take any of it with you. And that's the point that Solomon is making. And so if that's the case, the next verse, this severe evil he mentions, exactly as he came, so shall he go. And so what profit has he who has labored for the wind? Now keep in mind, this context is not about the honest labor of a person working for his support day by day. We might even say week by week. He's talking about somebody who loves silver, loves increase, who longs to be rich. And that's an idea, remember, that Paul uses in that passage we referenced in 1 Timothy 6. When he talks about the love of money being the root of all evil, he goes on to talk about the fact that they who will be, those who desire to be, those who dream of being rich, fall into temptation and into a snare, into many foolish and hurtful desires or lusts, all of which Solomon is bringing out here. And so if that's the purpose for which you're laboring, if that's your goal for life, if that sums up what makes a successful life, then when you have lived your life and breathed your last, and you look back on a life like that, what difference has it made? Well, for you, it may have made all the difference in the world in the negative direction. It'll all be left behind. And the question Solomon asked is, while you had it, while you were building it, amassing this fortune of fortunes, having your dreams come true, did all of this make you a happier, more secure, more contented, more peaceful, more well-rounded person? Or just the opposite of all of that? And Solomon could have easily said here, if you wonder about this, just look at me. Just look at me. 60,000 pounds of gold coming in every year. Am I happy? Solomon would have to say, well, not so much. Is there anything your heart desires you can't have? Solomon would say, nothing. Anything I want in this world, I can have. Just snap my fingers. It's there. It's mine. Are you happy? Well, no, I told you. I'm not happy. Do you have goods laid up for next year and the year after and for the rest of your life? Well, he says, of course I do. I'll never be poor as long as I live. So are you happy? Well, I've already told you that I'm not a happy person. I can't find the purpose in life except for fearing God and keeping his commandments, which sadly Solomon had forgotten about at the end. He knew the answers, he didn't live the answers. He understood the concepts, but he didn't live out and flesh out those concepts in his own life. And why is that? Well, there are a number of reasons why that may be the case. It might be the problem come with power. You might make the point that it comes because of all these wives and concubines, many of them from other lands that bring in their ideas. But part of it just might be that the wealth that God blessed him with turned out to be less a blessing and more a challenge or perhaps even a curse upon him. Now you might be saying, of all the lessons that doesn't apply to me, this is it. Because I'm not a wealthy person. I don't have 60,000 pounds of gold coming in a year. I don't even have an ounce of gold to my name. And if I did, I'd sell it and buy some groceries. But the problem with money is you don't have to have it to love it. Covetousness is the inordinate desire for something that's outside your grasp, something you don't have. And we oftentimes think of covetousness as describing those with great wealth like Scrooge, who's back in the back room counting his money and making life miserable for poor Bob Cratchit, who just wants a little coal to keep himself warm. There's a covetous man. Now, truth be told, that most covetousness comes from the hearts of those who don't have it, that think there's the answer. Who can't stop thinking about what life might be like if we just had more. If we just could strike it rich. If we could just hit the mother lode. Oh, how our problems would go away and life would be so much better if we could just get our hands on that money. It's just beyond our reach. And that love for money sometimes leads to criminality, fraud. But at the very least, that love of money leads to a misdirected priority, and leads us to believe something that just is not true. And that is that the rich are so happy. And that's why we're so miserable. I'll remind you as we close of what Paul says in Philippians chapter 4. When he writes to the Philippian brethren and he speaks to them about his support. Paul didn't have a contract to preach. He didn't have a yearly salary. He sometimes had, as he says in the text, more than he needs. And sometimes he has less coming in than you'd think a person would need. He's had plenty and he's suffered need. He's been hungry and he's had more than he can eat. And Paul says, and I'm summarizing by paraphrase fairly loosely here, he says it doesn't matter. One way or the other, it's all good with me. Because, and this is what he says, I've learned in whatever state I am, therewith to be content. You want peace in your life? There it is, contentment. You want to be able to sleep at night with your head pillowed? There's the word that does that for you. It's contentment. And how do you get there? It's not by having much or having little. It's not by obsessing about what you have at all. It's about putting your faith in God to take care of things and leaving matters with Him and not being obsessed with the stuff of this life. that learning to be content with whatever you have is something that seems to have eluded Solomon with all of his wealth, and seems to have eluded so many of us who have so much less than Solomon did. The solution to all of this is not having more. It's not amassing more. It's certainly not hoarding more. It's in coming to realize that doesn't matter. Contentment comes from within, not from outside and what we have, little or much. Paul had something Solomon never had. Paul didn't have 60,000 pounds of gold in his whole life. But Paul left this life with a contentment that Solomon never had. And when all is said and done, I'd a lot rather be like the Apostle Paul than Solomon. My friend, if you're here tonight and outside of Christ's change, that true riches are in the salvation Christ gives us. Perhaps as a Christian, you've strayed and need to come back. Why not do that now? And come as together we stand and sing.